Hey, my spookies. Before we get the show started, and boy, is it a doozy, I just want to give you a quick update on my dog Chicano and his fight against cancer. He just had his 7th chemo treatment. Everything is going really well. One more left in 2 weeks. And I want to say a humongous thank you to everybody who has helped me pay for this massive, massive amount of veterinary care. We've raised $4,001. And it really helps. It's almost half of the entire expense. So if you want to help, anything is appreciated. Go to weeklyspooky.com and click on Help My Dog. But now it is time for the show. Get ready. In like a lamb, out like a lion. That's how March is often described because winter weather is so unpredictable. But you know what else is unpredictable? The living dead. Born out of cold weather and hungry for human flesh. So get your sweaters on because it's time.
What's that? You want to be scared? Come with me. You will experience tales of horror, ghosts, and death. It is not recommended for the weak at heart. Listen in the dark. It's more fun that way. This is Weekly Spooky.
Hello, my spookies. It's Wednesday, and you know what that means. It's time for a little spooky in your weekly. And this week, it's a lot more than a little spooky because this is the first ever weekly spooky novella. That's right. This story is more expansive to give you that extra spooky feeling I know you all need just as much as I do. So make sure you're comfortable because this one is quite a doozy, and I felt like it was poetic to have it during the first week of spring, because as you know, March always has another idea in mind. So, make sure you're warm. Make sure you're cozy. Get yourself something warm to drink. Ideally, not blood, but I'm not here to judge you, because we have a truly terrifying story coming right up. But first, I want to say thank you so much for listening. If you love what we're doing here at Weekly Spooky, make sure you're subscribed on your favorite podcasting app. And while you're at it, why not leave a 5-star rating? It's a way that you can help us get the word out about the show, and it costs you nothing at all, whether it's on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or whatever app you enjoy listening to the show on. And if you want to help us in a more direct way, just go to weeklyspooky.com and click on Patreon. For as little as $1 a month, you get bonus episodes, sneak peeks behind the scenes at everything we're doing here, and so much more. But now, the chill is definitely coming in the air. It may be March, but it's getting cold. And I think Rob Fields is going to make us feel even colder. So kick back and enjoy this first ever weekly spooky novella after these quick words from our sponsors. Blood and Snow by Rob Fields. Prologue. Perspective, Veronica Grande. I managed to escape from Ridgeway Heights and was feeling relief at having escaped the killer. I kept replaying the events in my head that had happened prior to escaping from Grande Estate, my new home. I remembered I had finished having sex with my boyfriend before the shit went down. I had to hide him quickly before throwing my few scraps of clothes on and making my escape. Even in my present situation, I was still amazed how I, of all people, had inherited Oliver Grande's entire fortune. Remembering even further back, I recalled how my mother had raised me since giving birth. Mom was a maid who worked hard to keep a roof over our heads and food on the table. When I was finally old enough to work myself, I went out and got an after-school job to help contribute to paying our bills. And then, on that one fateful day, it was a fairy tale that just happened. I answered the door to see two middle-aged men wearing what appeared to be expensive suits. My mother, whose name is Abella Sableson, was scared that these men were there to kill both of us. Those fears were quickly put to rest when one of the men gave Mom the big manila envelope. As she read the contents, the men explained they were lawyers on retainer from Oliver Grande, one of the richest men in the country. I'd say his wealth and power was quite comparable to the Mirans who live over in Strickfield. On that day, I learned that Oliver Grande and Mom had had an affair when she worked for him as a maid at Grande Estate. When Abella told Oliver that she was pregnant with his child, the two of them had a huge fight that ended with her leaving the mansion. Devastated, Mom was left on her own to raise the child growing within her womb. The lawyers explained to us that Oliver had come to regret ever sending Abella away. He had desired her and wanted to marry her, but he had let the mantle of prestige get the better of him. So much so that he could never see what he truly had with Mom. The gasp and the bewildered look on Mom's face only confirmed what the lawyers told her and what was on the papers. Oliver Grande had passed away and left his entire fortune to me. For years, I knew I was Veronica Grande, but I never knew the real reason why my last name was different from Mom's. The men explained that Oliver, my father, left his entire fortune to me to atone for the great wrong he had done in sending Mom away all those years ago, and for not being a father to me himself. I couldn't believe it myself when Mom let me read the documents. To be honest, I was used to my lot in life. I wasn't the most popular girl at Ridgewood Heights South High School, but I had a nice circle of friends. Me and Mom were just getting by, but at least we had each other. It still hasn't sunk in yet that I was now wealthy, beyond my wildest dreams. No sooner had Mom and I moved into Grande Estate, I would quickly learn that there were other Grande family members who felt I had absolutely no right to any of my father's fortune whatsoever. There was no way to contest the will, however. The envelope also contained a copy of a DNA test that was taken on me, unbeknownst to either Mom or me. The test proved that I was, in fact, Oliver Grande's biological daughter and his youngest child. Now the entire fortune was mine, and mine alone. Of course I was going to share it with Mom. I mean, why wouldn't I? I hadn't even been living in Grande Estate a full week when someone dressed in all black kicked in my bedroom door. I had only managed to put on shorts and a t-shirt before the killer started shooting at me. I managed to duck. Then I shoved the killer down and fled. I screamed for Mom, but I was never able to find her. As I dodged gunshot after gunshot, I realized I had no other choice but to flee Grande Estate. I did feel comfort in knowing that the killer hadn't found my boyfriend. At the same time, I was very worried about Mom. I ran to the garage and grabbed a key fob to one of the new vehicles there. I found the correct car by pressing the horn button. As I got into the car, I just missed getting shot in the head. I managed to make it out of the garage and out onto the road. It wasn't long before another vehicle was pursuing me. I was panicking since I never drove an advanced sports car before. Eventually, I calmed down and told myself to drive it like a normal car. Fortunately for me, the sports car had an automatic transmission. Eventually, I lost my pursuer and continued to speed down the road. As I was trying to determine who could possibly want to kill me, I saw it was starting to snow. Nothing to worry about at the moment, as I kept driving faster and faster, the snow started to blow and come down hard. Then I remembered I was getting closer to the Strickfield area, and remembered hearing how that village almost always seemed to be the one place where winter liked to settle down. Every year they got hit with a blizzard or two, maybe more. I started to feel I was sliding a little and saw the roads had quickly become white. I couldn't believe how fast winter could truly happen around Strickfield, or in much of Feltner County. I really didn't want to have to slow down. If I did, I knew it would only be a matter of time before the killer would catch up to me again. When I started to slide again, I knew I had no choice but to slow down. I turned onto a main highway and crossed into Feltner County. I could hear the gusting winds as I continued to struggle to stay on the road. I even had the windshield wipers going fast and the defroster on full. I gasped and felt my heart sink when I saw familiar headlights behind me and knew that the killer had finally caught up with me. Even though I'd turned off, I could see the vehicle chasing me was the Hummer I passed in the garage on the way to this car. That Hummer could easily handle the snowy conditions. My sports car couldn't. I shrieked when the Hummer rear-ended me. "Leave me alone!" I yelled over my shoulder. The Hummer rear-ended me again. I cried out and felt my heart pounding when the car started to slide. I fought to maintain control and straighten the car, realizing I could either let the Hummer keep striking me or take a chance with the speed of my vehicle. I slammed the accelerator down. No sooner was I leaving the Hummer behind, I started to spin fast. This time, I had no way of controlling the vehicle. I continued to spin until I finally went off the road. The car slid down a small hill until the driver's side slammed into a tree. The engine died almost immediately. "Oh, Jesus, please, no," I groaned. It was then when I looked and saw the Hummer's lights out the passenger side. "No!" I quickly moved to the passenger side door and started to push it open. The winds were making it harder for me to push open enough just to get outside. When I finally did, the door slammed shut hard and fast. I shrieked when the windshield glass suddenly shattered and knew the killer had fired a gun at me. I screamed again as I ran into the woods. As fast as I was running, I could feel how freezing cold it really was. I never had the time to put on anything suitable for this raging blizzard. I managed to snag a jacket, but it was only made for autumn. I knew I had to keep going, in spite of the freezing temperatures and how damp and numb my bare feet were. I shrieked again when the bullet narrowly missed me and hit a tree as I passed. I forced myself to keep running, but knew I couldn't run for much longer. The frigid cold was really starting to get to me. I knew it would only be a matter of time before I'd likely drop over. As I came to a small creek, I groaned and knew I didn't have a choice. I cried out at the frigidness of the water on my bare feet. I managed to make it to the other side, only to feel the immediate heat of the bullet that had hit me in the back of my right shoulder. I screamed and fell onto my side. The pain hurt so much that I began to cry. I could already feel the tears freezing on my face. Just the same, I forced myself to get back on my feet and keep moving to preserve my life. I could feel my blood pouring out from my wound. I was also feeling quite soaked now. The snow and winds continued to blast me in spite of the fact that I was in a forest. I groaned at my injury and how bitterly cold my feet were. I was wondering if they were frostbitten by now. Even in the darkness, I could see they were still flesh-colored. But for how much longer? I knew I couldn't stay out here. I had to keep running and find shelter. Then I heard the gunshot and felt the searing pain in my lower left back. Again, I staggered and fell. My blood was making the gathering snow around me red. As I forced myself to get up, I took one more gunshot on my right side. I screamed my loudest when I felt the bullet had gone into my stomach. I knew now I was as good as dead. How far was I from the nearest town? How far was Strickfield, for that matter? Even if I could get to a house and call for help, I knew no emergency services would reach me in time, especially with a blizzard going on. Still, I wasn't going to make things easy for the killer. I forced myself to get back to my feet and keep running. "Just die, Veronica!" the killer yelled behind me. "You have no right to any of Oliver's money! No right!" The mask the killer was wearing was muffling the voice. I called on every last ounce of strength I had left and sprinted through the woods. I dodged one more bullet as I kept running. For a brief moment, I could actually feel my body heat warming me as I kept running and running. After several minutes, fatigue and blood loss were finally catching up to me. I moved and hid behind a big tree. I could see the shape of the killer, but I couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman. I knew there would be no way to determine the killer's identity before I would finally die. And that was if the killer would catch me and actually give me the satisfaction of unmasking before shooting me for the final time. I remained where I was and continued to hope the killer wouldn't find me. It was then when I looked and saw the big river there, and it showed no signs of freezing. I wasn't sure if I was delusional now, but I could swear there was a faint reddish-green glow coming from the water itself. Funny thing, the water was actually warming me. Then I shook my head and knew this couldn't be possible. My pain now became too much for me, and I began to cry again. I was mortally wounded and probably to the point where I was about to finish bleeding out. I cried more when I knew I was being hunted like an animal. And for money. All I ever wanted was a better life for me and Mom. And then when we finally got it, I lowered myself and sat against my big tree. If I was going to die, I would die with the warmth of this water beside me. And then I felt my eyes rolling up into my skull as I finally died. Or so I thought. I wasn't sure how long I was dead, but I would later determine that a huge gust of wind had blown my body right into that warm river. I think I may have floated out into the seemingly glowing yet murky waters before I finally sank below the surface and remained motionless for several minutes. Unfortunately, neither the killer nor I had any knowledge of this part of Feltner County. Maybe if we'd known, we might have made it a point to avoid this very area that came to be known as the backwoods of Strickfield. Most unfortunately, neither of us knew of the horrors that awaited us in here. And there was certainly no way of knowing that years ago, toxic waste had emptied from a corroded barrel that was dropped here and had rolled into this very river. The toxic waste had mixed with the water and contaminated it to a point where those who lived in the backwoods here never went anywhere near it for any reason. As the warm, murky bath continued to soak my body for several minutes, who would know for sure exactly what kind of mutations would come as a result? And then I finally felt myself starting to twitch. Then again and again, I opened my eyes and felt the water's warm embrace all around me. I soon lifted my arms and felt my hand break the surface. I made a tight fist and knew something had happened. I knew somehow that I was changed. When I emerged from the waters that became my cocoon, I knew it was time to get revenge on the fucker who murdered me. Don't go away. Weekly Spooky will be right back. The killer growled and roared in frustration. How could I have possibly gotten away, right? I mean, the killer knew I'd taken 3 lethal shots from the high-powered rifle used. The killer had seen plenty of my blood and knew I was seriously hurt. Yet, I managed to get away. The blizzard continued its raging fury. Even though the killer was warmly dressed, I could only guess there was no returning to Ridgeway Heights until there was 100% certainty that I was confirmed dead. That meant a positive ID. It was a short time later when the killer heard the sounds of my laughter. The killer stopped and raised the rifle. "Who is that?" Then my laughter was heard again. I must have sounded like an innocent girl. "Veronica," the killer growled. "Show yourself. Let me put you out of your goddamn misery." The killer heard my innocent laughter again and saw my dark shape in the trees. The killer took quick aim and fired. "Missed me," I sang in a voice you'd hear in scary movies, and laughed innocently again. "You think I'm playing games here, Veronica?" the killer roared. "You had no right, you goddamn bitch! No right to any of Oliver's wealth!" But the killer could only hear my innocent laughter one more time. When the killer saw my dark shape again in the trees, it only resulted in another wasted bullet. The killer heard my innocent laughter yet again and turned to run. When my innocent laughter came the loudest yet, the killer groaned upon tripping and falling forward. "God damn it!" the killer muttered and reached for the rifle. Only now the killer saw one of my bare legs and feet right next to it. The killer looked up and saw me now. I was still wearing the shorts and t-shirt I had put on after having sex with my boyfriend, and I didn't appear to be the least bit cold. Even more, my entire body, including my hair, was as white as snow. My nails, fingers, and toes were solid black. For the record, none of my nails were polished. I would later learn that my toxic eyes were a bluish gray with green irises. The killer could see the gunshot wounds on my body, but that I was no longer bleeding, nor was I feeling any pain. The killer quickly grabbed the rifle and stood up. I just stood there as the killer aimed at me and pulled the trigger. Click. Then I smiled sweetly and laughed innocently again. Aww. Suddenly, my cute face turned into one of utter rage as I rushed at my murderer. I easily jumped on my prey, and we were soon wrestling in the snow. "Get off me, you bitch!" the killer yelled, but I was in no mood for small talk. I wanted to tear the mask right off my killer and see who it was. However, I hadn't counted on the killer having a second weapon, a handgun. I cried out when I took a bullet right in the head. I fell and landed on my back. I must have laid there for several minutes. The killer managed to reload the rifle while not taking their eyes off of me. Suddenly, I sat up sharply and screamed. Even though the killer screamed in response, I still couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman with the mask covering their mouth. However, the killer did point the rifle at me and shoot. And I was flat on my back again. The killer again moved away from me, the rifle ready. I still wasn't feeling like taking my death lying down and sat up again. I got back to my feet and glared the killer down. But the killer wasn't going to just let me come for my revenge and emptied the rest of the rifle into me. I pointed right at the killer now. "You can't kill me." I tightened my fists. "I'm already dead." The killer finally got the message. I mean, I was only shot several times and had inky blue blood all over me. When the killer turned and ran away, I howled with rage. Now my hunter had become the hunted. I chased the killer all the way back to the Hummer. Unfortunately for me, the killer made it back inside and locked the doors. All I managed to do was shatter the driver's side window out before the killer managed to get away. Feeling mad as hell, I tightened my fists and howled so loudly that I was sure anybody who was dumb enough to be out and about in these woods had to have heard me. Ah, these woods. I knew right then and there that I could never return to Ridgeway Heights again. The backwoods of Strickfield would forever be my new home. 1 year later, perspective, Abella Sableson. It was a little over a year ago that my daughter's car was found out in the backwoods area of Strickfield. Veronica managed to get more than 100 miles away the night she fled from Grande Estate. She was eventually found by her pursuer. When the police searched for her after the blizzard was over, they managed to find the fall jacket she was wearing partially buried under some snow. There were no signs of Veronica herself, however. The police reports and newspapers said that my daughter was never found and may still be out in those Strickfield backwoods somewhere. She never returned to Grande Estate, and I never got so much as a phone call or a text from her. Now it's finally come down to this. I'm sitting in an SUV with 4 others who are going to help me find Veronica. I never got close to any of them. However, when I told them I was planning to come to Strickfield to look for Veronica and why, they agreed to come with me. You know what this means, to find Veronica? I tell them. The driver, Amos Culp, glanced at me in the rearview mirror. We'll find her. I know I want to find Veronica just as badly as you do. But you didn't have to rent a cabin for us to, I start to say. Don't worry about it, Amos interrupts. Turns out the trapper who owns the cabin owed me a favor, so I'm just calling it in. Besides, it's better than paying for a motel or hotel and having to keep driving back out this way from Strickfield or Pendleton. With this cabin, we're only a few miles away from those backwoods Veronica disappeared in. We're all good, Abella. Trina had her arms folded in front of her and didn't speak much during the trip. I wish Veronica would have called the house or let us know somehow that she's all right. I don't get it. She inherited all of Grande Estate and all that money. Not even a week later, she disappears out here? That's why we're going to investigate those backwoods just outside of Strickfield, I say, putting a hand on her shoulder. Why didn't the state police thoroughly investigate that area when they found Veronica's car? Tristan asked, sitting on the other side of me. I mean, I get it was during a blizzard and all, but just saying. That's just it, Morgan says, riding shotgun. It was during a blizzard. It would have been hard to try and look for somebody during a bad blizzard like that, especially in a heavily wooded area like those backwoods. Persistence may be paying off, I say. I've been spreading the word around on social media. I've even taken some trips to Strickfield myself. Then that phone call finally came last week from someone that said they saw my daughter somewhere in that same wooded area where her car was found over a year ago. I groan. I will not rest until I find Veronica. It's important that I find her. Well, we want to know what happened to Veronica too, Trina replies. Not much further to the cabin, Amos says. It's not long after we cross the Feltner County line. Amos turns off onto a dirt road and drives a short distance before we turn up the drive that goes to the cabin. When Amos stops, we get out of the SUV and bring our bags inside. We keep our backpacks with our gear in the car. As soon as we're all inside, we get startled when someone else is coming in the back door, an older man appearing to be in his early 50s. Can we help you, sir? I ask. Amos puts a gentle hand on my shoulder. It's okay, Abella. This is Tom Barlow, the trapper who's letting us have the cabin. The man smiles. I just want to make sure y'all got here before I took off. Then he looks us all over. So what brings y'all this way? Some hunting and fishing? Probably some hunting, Amos tells him. In those woods just off the main highway. He points in the direction. That way. Tom's face suddenly drops. Tell me y'all ain't serious. He points in the same direction. Ain't nobody told you none about them woods outside Strickfield? What about them? Trina asks. They're just normal woods, right? Tom looks at all of us now. If I didn't know better, I'd say he's probably thinking we're not right or something. Ain't none of you ever been to Strickfield? There's all kinds of stories that go on in them backwoods outside of Strickfield. those that have been in there and lived to tell about it. Well, even they'll tell you all the things they seen in them woods. Like what? Morgan asks. Like what? Tom repeats with some surprise. Young lady, there are stories about things ranging from acts of cannibalism to strange creatures. There have even been talks about some little children walking around in there, ones that came back from the dead. We listen as Tom tells us a story he heard about a little backwoods boy named Billy McCracken and how he was killed and came back to life. Also how he turned some other kids living in the backwoods into things like him. I don't know none what brought him back to life, but there was a man who saw him and almost didn't make it out of there. Yeah, Mike Cruz was his name. Then Tom gets agitated. Look, I ain't making this shit up. I'm telling y'all right now, you do not want to go in them woods. The rest of us are looking at each other. Then I talk to Tom. Listen, I know you mean well, but my daughter disappeared into those woods over a year ago, and I got a tip saying she was seen in those same woods just recently. We're just here to find her. Tom studies us for a second. Look, ma'am, I can understand where you're coming from. I do. I got two boys of my own. I suppose I'd want to look for them too, if they turned up missing. But you're talking about them backwoods over there. Now, I can't stop y'all from going into them woods, but if y'all go in there, I ain't promising you you're going to come back out the same. Some people become changed, and many people, they just don't come back out again. Ever. Tom turns and opens the back door. He motions for us to come to him. We go out onto the back porch. Also, take a good look at that sky. There's a blizzard coming soon. Pretty mean one from the looks of it. Probably gonna reach here in the next hour. You go into them woods, especially in that shit. Don't plan on anybody coming for y'all. Then Morgan speaks up. Come on, it can't be all that bad. I read Strickfield's own mayor lives out in those woods. You don't hear anything about Mayor Patrick Gunter going missing. Tom just looks at us now. Like I said, I can't stop y'all, but remember, I warned you. Nobody says anything for a little bit. When Tom sees we're not moved by what he said, he groans and shakes his head a little. Then he hands Amos the keys. If you'd have told me about this before I agreed to let you use the cabin, I'd have said no, but I owe you for helping me when my truck broke down a few months ago. We talk to Tom for a little bit longer. Then he leaves, telling us he wants to get back to Strickfield before the blizzard hits. We watch him get into his truck that he had parked out back and take off. Now, it's just us. Was he really expecting us to believe all that shit about what he just told us? Tristan asked. I groan. I don't give a flying fuck if there's a maniac with a hockey mask walking around in those woods. One way or another, I'm going to find Veronica. When I finally see her, alive or dead, then, and only then, will I give up searching for her. If all of you are still coming with me, then we're going in. If not, we didn't come over 100 miles with you just to leave you here and head back home, Tristan tells me. Like you said, we gotta find Veronica. I look at all of them and see they have every intention of sticking with me. Okay, get everything unpacked. Then we'll leave here and head into those woods. What was this tip you got? Trina asks me. I got a phone call from a man who says he saw Veronica back in the woods, I answer. I dig into my purse and pull a few things out. This is a picture of Veronica I posted on social media and on missing posters I tacked up. Then I raise a small piece of notebook paper. The man who called me gave me this address. He lives in those backwoods there somewhere. We need to get to this place and talk to him. I groan. Why didn't I think to ask for directions? The others don't question me any further. The truth was, I already knew a blizzard was coming this way. But I refused to wait one more moment after I got that phone call. As soon as everybody's ready, we leave the cabin. We get back into the SUV and head towards the backwoods of Strickfield. Weekly Spooky will be right back after these quick messages. Perspective, Trina. It sure got dark fast once Amos drove us into the woods. I can't help looking behind us and seeing those nasty-looking clouds moving really fast, almost as if they're sealing the way out of here. I can't help thinking about what Tom Barlow told us. I don't know. He didn't seem like he was fucked in the head or on something. I mean, I think I did smell a little pot on him, but a couple of us do pot. In fact, Morgan and I both shared a smoke before we left the cabin. Just the same, neither of us go on talking about things like walking dead kids and stuff. I look out the window and see the trees waving as the winds are picking up more and more. Yeah, it's definitely going to be a bad storm. I look up front. Anything on the GPS, Amos? I'm using the GPS that came with the car, he replies. I even tried a few GPS programs on my phone. None of them have anything on the roads back here. You'd think there'd be at least something. There's nobody walking around out here, or we could ask somebody for directions, Tristan mutters. I'm even trying to use my own phone, I say. I punched in the address Abella told us, but nothing's showing up. Shit, I got no bars now. Me either, Morgan groans. Damn it. Everybody else confirms they've got no bars on their smartphones. I'm about to ask Abella how she got the phone call, but then I see wires on the poles and know the people living out here are probably using landlines. Abella sighs hard now. I'm not going back. One way or another, I'm finding this address and getting some answers. We tell her we're with her, and then it starts snowing. It's not going to be long before everything gets white, fast. We soon stop at an intersection. I can't read that road sign, Tristan says. Then he gets out and goes to look at it up close. He comes back and gets in. I think that says Skeeter Road. We need to find Old Dutch Road, Abella reminds us. Guess we'll just have to keep driving around in here until we find it, or unless we find somebody, Amos says. Glad we pulled off for gas before we hit the cabin. We got a full tank, so we should be good. If we get low, we can always leave here and head into Strickfield. We take a vote and are unanimous in heading down Skeeter Road. Amos turns and takes us further into the backwoods. I look out the window and see it's really dark now. The snow is really coming down and the wind is picking up. I have a very bad feeling about this. We've been driving down one road after another. We can read some of the road signs. The ones we can't, we have to get out and read them under the car's headlights. This time, it's my turn to get out and read the next sign. It's hard to open my door with the wind blowing hard against it. When I do get it open and get out, I slip and fall flat on my ass. I get back on my feet again and look at the sign. It's not Old Dutch Road. I get back in the car and we continue on. We come by a few more roads and still don't find the right one. We still don't see anybody out here. We've passed a few houses and cabins, even some trailers, but they all look dark. You'd think there'd be somebody home in these places. I mean, it's not like it's late at night or something. With that blizzard, it almost makes it seem like it's night back here. I look at my watch and see it's just after 4 o'clock. Thinking about slipping, Amos has four-wheel drive on the SUV. I can't believe how slippery it is now. I can hear the wind blowing fierce as the snow keeps coming down. Amos also has the windshield wipers going. Looking at the roads, though, I'm thinking it's only a matter of time before they're too snow-covered, and we won't be able to keep driving on them. I'd be lying if I said these woods didn't look scary. I don't know how many miles these woods are, but it seems like we've been in here a long time. As big as these woods are, we might as well be looking for a needle in a haystack, Tristan mutters. When he hears Abella sigh, he quickly looks her way. Sorry. You still want to keep going, Abella? Amos asks. This weather's only getting worse, and the roads are getting real bad. Abella clenches her fist. Veronica is my daughter, and we will find her, goddammit. Yeah, her mind's definitely made up. Guess that would explain why she packed provisions in her backpack and had us do the same. Another road coming up, Morgan says. The sign's got snow on it. I'll have to get out and brush it off. Amos slows down and stops. Then Morgan gets out and has to stand on the front bumper to reach the sign. She brushes it off. What's the name of that road again, Abella? She calls out. Old Dutch Road, Abella calls back. This is it, we hear her cheer. Old Dutch Road! She gets back down and comes back in. Now we just need to pick a direction. We'll go left and see what the house numbers are, Amos says. We need to look for 21 Old Dutch Road, Abella tells us. Amos turns left and starts driving again. It takes a few minutes before we finally come up to the first house. Looks more like a hut. Amos stops. Since it's on my side, I get out and try to look at the mailbox. There's no number on it. I open the box. No mail. I walk up to the house. I have to do some looking, but I eventually find the rusted out numbers next to the door. I turn and go back to the car. 15, I tell Abella when I get back in. We'll have to go to the next place to see if we're going in the right direction for sure or not. On it, Amos replies, and gets us going again. We go further down the road. That snow's just coming down so fast. Amos is even taking his time. It's then when the headlights reveal the next house, directly ahead. What the headlights couldn't have shown us was that the road ahead was curved. We would end up finding out the hard way when we'd suddenly feel the car dip fast. What the hell? Amos grumbles. He shifts into reverse, but we're quickly finding out we're stuck. Shit. Morgan, Tristan, and I get out and take a look. I quickly look back at Amos. When he rolls his window down, I tell him, small ditch. There was so much snow we couldn't see it. We don't hear Amos groaning, but we can see the front tires spinning and the car not moving. To put it mildly, we're fucked. When Amos turns the motor off, we all get out and head to the back to get our backpacks. There's no mailbox out here at the road, but I head up to the house to check the address. When I reach the front porch, I look for any kind of a number. I even brush off the sides at the door. There's no mailbox here either. I even try knocking on the door a few times with no success. I shriek when somebody puts a hand on my shoulder. It's Abella. I can't find any house number, I tell her. I don't think anybody lives here. Abella motions for me to move aside. Then she turns the knob and opens the door. We go inside and confirm that nobody lives here. The furniture looks broken and battered. The place looks like it hasn't been cleaned in years. At least it's a good place to get in out of the snow and talk about what we're going to do next. God damn it, Amos growls. Nothing we can do about it, buddy, Tristan tells him. The best we can do is walk till we get out of here and maybe make it to Strickfield. We don't even know where Strickfield is, Amos replies. I point in the direction. I think it's that way. I saw the compass on your dashboard, Amos. Abella gets us to try looking around for anything that might have this address on it. After looking in all the rooms, there's nothing to be found. Not even a bill? Tristan mutters, assuming they even get bills out here. What are we doing now? Morgan asks. We don't have a choice, Abella says. We have to find 21. She looks at us now. You know what? You people don't have to come with me. Just stay in here and keep out of the blizzard. Amos puts his hand on Abella's shoulder. I'm going with you. Me too, I say. I guess we're heading back out, Morgan mutters. As a plan is being discussed, I can't help looking out at what was probably the kitchen window. Just out of curiosity, I turn one of the faucet taps. Much to my surprise, water actually trickles out. The people that live out in the country use well water, meaning they're not hooked up to the city and paying water bills. After I shut the water back off, my eyes are suddenly wide open. Something's moving behind the trees by what looks like a firewood pile. outside. When the others turn to me, I tell them what I discovered. Yeah, there is something moving, Morgan says. Is that a person? And then the figure comes out, enough for us to see that it is a person. If we didn't know better, we'd swear it was a girl, wearing just shorts and a t-shirt. Is that Veronica? Abella stammers. We don't waste any time and have to exit through the front door since there's no back one. We trudge through the snow and head out back. The person isn't there now. When we get to where we thought we saw her, Amos quickly points to them. Footprints, he quickly says. Looks like whoever it is walking barefoot. I turn and move. Well, let's follow them. As we move and follow the footprints, Abella calls out, Veronica! Veronica, it's Mom! We came out here to find you! We continue to follow the tracks through some more of the forest. Eventually, we come to another house. This one makes me think of the story Hansel and Gretel. It's not a candy house with a witch living inside, but this place is definitely not on any path or road. The footprints lead right to the house. When we reach it, we can see the front window is broken out. There's no glass around. Looking inside, this place looks like the last house we were in. Whoever it is went in here, Morgan says. Wet footprints here. We all climb in through the front window. It's then when we hear some ruckus. I move away from the others and head to the back of the house. The others are right behind me. When we get there, we see that the back door is wide open. She's back outside, Abella yells. Go! I sprint out of the house ahead of everybody. Now I can see the person running. I got this, I yell over my shoulder. I can see the long white hair, and I know for sure it's a woman. If I didn't know better, I'd swear she's got white skin. I don't mean what society calls white skin, I mean she's just as white as the snow. Stop! Veronica, is that you? Stop! I yell. Whoever this is can really run, even in bare feet and in the snow. I'm a track star at my high school, but she's making me look bad. I'm still ahead of the others, though. I follow the girl through some thicker woods now. And then I hear some laughing. Sounds like a young girl who's happy as can be. I see the footprints again and pick up the trail. I'm surprised this girl can walk out here barefoot, let alone in the clothes she's wearing. Wait a minute. Abella said that was what she was wearing when she fled from Grande Estate that night and ended up getting lost in here. Veronica, please, I call out. If it's you, just stop. Your mom's been really worried about you all this time. She hasn't given up on you. Please. I hear the happy laughter again as I keep following the footprints. It's getting frustrating since it's really dark. It's got to be sunset by now. Shit! I quickly take off my backpack and go for the flashlight inside. I turn it on and see the footprints again. I hear the happy laughter one more time. When I turn around, I finally see her and gasp. Her skin and hair are snowy white. Her eyes look so evil. Where her eyes should have been white, they were like a grayish color. Her eyes themselves were a sickening green. Her nails are completely black, fingers and toes. It's definitely Veronica, though. Oh my God, what happened to you? Veronica just looks at me now. Trina, she whispers eerily. Before I can call out to the others, Veronica leaps at me and takes me down, making me drop the flashlight. I groan and struggle to get her off of me, but Veronica quickly overpowers me and pins my wrists down. Oh, fuck! My wrists suddenly burn with the cold from her hands. I continue to struggle against her, but I can't believe how incredibly strong she is. Get off of me! I shriek. Help! Help me! Veronica looks at me softly. Trina, she whispers again. We look at each other for several seconds. Then she looks sad. Hungry. Her hands are so cold, they really burn my wrists to where they feel like they're frostbitten. And then I'm feeling even more pain when Veronica lowers her head and bites right into my throat. I can't even scream to try and call for help again. As soon as I feel the flesh on my throat torn away, I stop struggling against whatever this thing that once was Veronica is and feel my life slipping away. I lose more and more control over my body. And then everything gets dark forever. More scares are coming right back when Weekly Spooky returns. Perspective, Amos Culp. It's really hard trying to keep up with Trina. Even in hiking boots, I'm surprised she can run in the snow like she does. Guess that's what comes with being on the track team at Ridgewood Heights South High. It's also dark to where we have to use our flashlights now. We keep calling out for Trina. Abella keeps calling out for Veronica. Now I'm confused. If that girl we saw was Veronica, then why the hell didn't she ever try to get in touch with anyone? Instead, Veronica's really been living here in these woods for a whole year? If that is her, then how's she surviving? I know Veronica's never been much of a hunter. She didn't even like when I talked about hunting. We keep following the tracks made by both Trina and the barefoot girl. We finally reach a point where there's blood in the snow. There's also a broken flashlight. We don't see anyone here. Not a soul. But then I notice something out of the ordinary. You guys see how Trina's tracks end here? I point out. But look, the ones of the bare feet, they're the only ones that keep going from here. Tristan gets a little scared now. You don't suppose whatever that girl was got Trina, do you? I really don't know for sure, I tell him. Trina! Tristan calls out. Morgan and Abella also call out for Trina. Abella continues to call out for Veronica, but nobody answers back. Trina's gotta be able to hear us. I mean, she couldn't have gone that far away. Still, seeing the blood and broken flashlight here makes me wonder. After a little bit, we stop calling out for Trina. Aw, she's dead, man, Tristan says, shaking his head quickly. She's gotta be dead. She ain't calling back to us. I think that girl must have gotten her. She shouldn't have gone off by herself. I raise my hand. Tristan, don't, okay? We can't afford to be losing our shit, not out here. We have to keep going, Abella tells us. But Trina, Morgan tries to say, but I put my hand on Morgan's shoulder. We'll look for her. She can't have gone far. But I think Morgan was believing Tristan. I don't like this. I think something did happen to Trina. There's no way she wouldn't answer back. Again, Abella tells us we can go back and get out of the blizzard. I didn't think things would happen like this. No, we gotta stick together now, I say. We don't know what's going on out here with Trina missing. The others are quick to agree with me. Still, I'm beginning to think Tristan's right. Something either attacked Trina or possibly killed her. I'm almost afraid of what we'll find out. We move and follow the single set of footprints. At times, we do see some drops of blood. Then the trail gets cold when the footprints and the blood drops end at a small river. We have no idea which way to go. It's dark and the snow and winds keep blowing. What's more is that we're stuck in these woods with the car not being able to go anywhere. And on top of that, we lost Trina. What do you guys want to do? I ask. Way I see it, we can go about this two ways. One, we can split up in twos and pick a direction. Or two, we stick together, safety in numbers. I have to know if that's Veronica, Abella snaps. I'm going this way. I'll go with you, Morgan says, following her. Then Tristan bumps my arm. We better go the other way. We can cover more ground. I groan and follow Tristan. I'm telling you, I got a very bad feeling about this, I say. I think we should follow the women. But what if we all end up going the wrong way? Tristan asks. Then it hits me. You know, what if this girl's hunting us? If that's the case, it probably won't matter what direction we end up going. Tristan gives me a funny look. Why would that girl be hunting us? What do we got that she wants? I groan. I don't know. Something just feels wrong about all of this. We gotta try and find Veronica, Tristan reminds me. We've come this far. Once we find Veronica, Abella gets what she's been wanting, and everything will be good for everybody. We just gotta find Veronica. You know that. I know, I snap back. You don't have to keep reminding me. We should have come looking for her when it's not a blizzard. We both keep arguing about being here during the blizzard and waiting. One thing about Tristan, he's about as headstrong as a damn woman. Veronica was pretty headstrong, too. Ain't no wonder she ended up getting all the way out here that night. We keep following the river. Without our phones, we don't know where the hell we are. There's no sun or moon. It's dark as shit out here, and the snow keeps blowing and drifting. I look up at the sky and can't see jack or shit. Okay, I can see those dark clouds up there that's bringing this blizzard down all over Feltner County. Why this county gets the shit end of that deal every winter, I'll never know. I'm gonna go across the water, Tristan says. Maybe we'll do better finding tracks if we each take a side. Whatever, I grumble. Tristan quickly moves across the water. It ain't frozen yet, but I can see it's freezing along the top at the ends. Tristan and I use our flashlights to keep lighting our way. Amos! Over here! Tristan calls out. I turn and move across the water to get to him. I shine my light where his is and see those footprints he's found. Made by bare feet. Let's go, I say, before the snow covers him up. We move and follow the tracks. I shine my light ahead, no sign of the girl. We keep following the fresh tracks as far as they'll take us. I can't believe that girl can move so fast in this shit, Tristan mutters. These backwoods people can probably do a lot of shit in here, I say. Hell, they're probably making their own gas to power their houses and trailers. These are probably the kind of people that live in a world all their own, not going into civilization unless they absolutely have to. Like the Amish? Tristan asks. Kind of, except you don't want to be planning a day around this place like you would in Amish country. We keep following the tracks. It takes many, many minutes, but the tracks end at a large, two-story house. Like the house we were at earlier, this one looks like it hasn't been lived in for God knows how long. Makes me wonder how many people actually do live here in these woods, I say. This is the third place we've been at that's abandoned. We both know we gotta check it out. We find the front door easily opens. Once we're inside, I gotta help Tristan push the door shut, since that wind keeps raging with the snow. We finally get the door closed. At least the windows are still good here, so we have a little shelter from the storm. I'll head upstairs, Tristan says. I think we should stick together, I say. I'll be okay. Then he picks up a board. Got this with me. My gut tells me I should go up with him, but he's already nearly up the stairs. Ah, shit, I mutter. I grab my own 2x4 and keep it ready as I look around downstairs. And then I see wet footprints. Bare feet. That girl's gotta be in this house somewhere. I stand just outside a door and quickly fling it open. Just an empty closet. Then I remember Tristan being upstairs and haul ass up there. I quickly find him in one of the bedrooms. I told you I'll be okay, Tristan snaps. That girl's in this house somewhere, I say. Then I tell him about the wet footprints I found. Tristan nods once. Okay, we stick together then. We move across the upstairs and check the rooms. They have furniture in them and enough dust on it to make you want to choke. Even the blankets on the beds have dust on them. We check the closets too. They're either empty or don't have much of anything in them. We're about to leave the room when Tristan gets my attention, and I turn around and see... Veronica? Is that you? I gasp, ready to piss myself. I say I'm ready to piss myself because she looks like something right out of one of those scary movies. Veronica's hair and skin's white enough to be chalk. Her nails are all black and her eyes are just... Aw, man. She's just scaring the bejesus out of me right now. She's still wet and dripping from being out in the snow. Just the way she's looking at us right now. I ain't no doctor, but I'd be willing to bet my cabin back home she ain't herself anymore. I remember her wearing that outfit she's wearing right now from that night, a year ago. Only thing that almost makes me lose control of my waterworks is seeing that blood on her face and t-shirt. Aw, man. Tristan drops his flashlight and raises his board to hit Veronica, but she can actually move fast. She knocks the board out of his hands and grabs his wrists. He shrieks and cries out like a girl now. "Your hands are so cold!" he yells. "Let go of me, you bitch!" Before I can move to help Tristan, Veronica points right at me, making me drop my board. Her voice is this raspy kind of whisper. "You stay right there." Then she slams Tristan up against the wall and bites right into his throat. He screams so loud you'd think you could actually hear him through that blizzard outside. Blood squirts everywhere, especially when Veronica pulls back and has a chunk of Tristan's throat in her mouth. "Oh, man!" I scream and quickly bolt out of the door. Now I'm hearing Veronica screaming like a banshee. I'm about to reach the stairs when I see... "Oh, man, no," I groan. Trina's right there on the stairway now. And she looks just like Veronica, with that white skin, white hair, black nails, and those strange eyes. And her throat's been ripped out. Veronica got her too. "Hungry," Trina utters in that same choked whisper Veronica has. "Miss?" I hear Veronica groan as she's almost to us. I quickly shake my head and put my hands up in front of me. "Veronica, I don't know what happened to you, but I tried to save you that night. I really tried. You gotta believe that." Veronica howls at me. Then Trina grabs my arm, making me drop my flashlight. I scream and shove Trina down the stairs, my backpack falling off. Then I follow behind her and eventually step over her as I get to the bottom and get the hell out of that house. "Come back here, Amos!" I hear Veronica shrieking behind me, right through the winds. I look and see she's really running after me. Even through the blowing snow, I can hear her howling at me. Oh, Jesus God. I knew it would only be a matter of time before Veronica would finally catch up to me. I ain't never been a fast runner. I mean, I can run, but I just ain't fast. I know I'm definitely slower with these boots on, but I wasn't expecting to be out here in these woods running for my life like this. "You will stop, Amos!" Veronica's voice sounds like a real high-pitched shriek now. "You will not escape me!" And then... Okay, you can call me crazy. You can even call me a sissy. I quickly pick up some snow in my hands. I make a snowball and I heave it right at Veronica. The snowball crashes right into her chest and makes her stagger. I make another snowball and heave it to hit her smack in the face and knock her on her ass. I turn and start running again. I manage to lose her and hide behind a big tree. "Amos!" Oh, man. I've heard Veronica howl with rage before when she was really pissed off, but now that she's dead and walking, hearing her talk like that just... Oh, man, I mutter when I feel I'm a little warmer in my jeans. Veronica really did make me lose control of my waterworks. Can't worry about that now. I gotta get the fuck away from here and go find Morgan and Abella. Assuming Veronica didn't already find them first, before finding Tristan and me. Perspective, Morgan. After having no luck finding Veronica, Abella and I double back to see if we could find Amos and Tristan. Abella doesn't say much of anything, but I understand what she's feeling. She just wants to find her daughter and make things good for everybody here. Veronica! Abella calls out again. Where are you? Veronica! I call out louder than Abella. Amos! Tristan! Trina! When we don't hear anything, Abella reaches over and takes my wrist. Are you sure it was a good idea to bring Amos along? Amos is a good hunter and tracker, I remind her. Abella just looks at me with doubt. I'm telling you, Abella, he should be able to find her, I say, and pull my wrist away. Eventually, we come up to some tracks that are almost covered by the blowing snow. If we follow these, we should catch up with Tristan and Amos. The two of us use our flashlights to follow the tracks. When they split up, Abella goes across the small river to follow that set. I stick with my set until I see it also eventually crosses the water. I meet back up with Abella for us to follow their tracks. After some minutes, we come up to another house. I don't know about Abella, but something about that place sure scares me, just looking at it. Don't go away. Weekly Spooky will be right back. Suddenly, a huge gust of wind blows and knocks me on my ass. Abella comes to me and helps me up. You okay? She asks. Yeah, I reply. I just wasn't expecting that. This blizzard's getting worse and worse. We might have to take shelter. I am not stopping until I find Veronica, Abella yells. She's my daughter. I'm not stopping until I know for a fact that she's dead. You really don't understand how important this is, do you? I've been looking far too long for her to just give up. You know damn well I can't afford to give this up now. You know that! Abella and I just look at each other for a long moment. Then I nod. Believe me, I do know. We should at least check the house, though. And we're going to, she assures me. The two of us walk to the house and can easily go inside. In fact, the front door is wide open. I point down to the porch boards. Abella. It looks like people were here already. Then we're going the same way, she replies. Now I see this weird look on her face before she quickly grabs my arm and pulls me to her. She turns me around so I can... Trina? I choke out. Yeah, this thing that's standing in front of the doorway looks like Trina and is wearing her clothes, but it's got these weird colored eyes and its skin and hair are chalk white, and it has black fingernails. I'm ready to throw up when I see the bone that's sticking out of its neck. It has blood all over the front of its jacket. I'm so hungry, Trina says in this choked whisper. Suddenly, Trina reaches out and grabs my hand. I cry out as she pulls me right to her with a strength I never even knew she had, making me drop my flashlight. I knew Trina was a top athlete at our high school. She goes out running most every day. She applies herself in the weight room. She even watches her diet, but there's no way in hell that she can be this goddamn strong. Then I really start screaming when I feel how incredibly cold her hand is on mine. It burns. Abella's trying to help pull me away from Trina, but this fucking thing is just so incredibly strong and incredibly cold. Abella finally manages to get me free. I cry out when I see my hand looks black and feels numb. It's completely frostbitten. Come on, Morgan, Abella yells. Run! I turn and start running with her. We don't get far before I'm tackled from behind. Now Trina's right on top of me. I'm so hungry, Morgan, Trina utters. Abella tries reaching out to push Trina off me. When she sees Trina's bare hands, she quickly remembers how my hand got frostbitten just by her touching bare skin to mine. Trina hisses at Abella and makes her back off. You damned all of us, you bitch! Trina returns her attention to me and gives me that demented look of hunger that only a thing like her can show. Hungry, Trina rasps again. I try fighting her off, but now I'm the one who forgot about Trina's exposed skin. She takes hold of my wrists and makes me close my eyes and scream at the top of my lungs. Trina's cold skin is so painful. God, it burns. When I open my eyes, I can see Abello left me here to die. I am so totally fucked. Trina easily slams my arm to the snowy ground. Then I manage out one loud, long, last scream when Trina lowers her face and sinks her teeth right into my neck. My scream is louder when I feel the skin at my neck being torn away from the rest of my body. I can see my blood squirting upward. I can also see my torn flesh in Trina's mouth. When I can't scream anymore, I'm actually a bit surprised that I'm not dead yet. I can feel the life leaving my body as Trina munches on the flesh she's taken from me. As my eyes start shaking closed, I have this feeling. I just know. Just know. Know that. That. I feel myself twitching. I slowly open my eyes. It's still snowing hard. I twitch some more and feel really wet on my upper body. I sit up slowly and see my jacket is gone. My shirt and bra were torn open. My chest is fully exposed. And I mean it's fully exposed as in I have no skin whatsoever. Trina is right there looking at me and eating more flesh she took off of my body. By all rights, I should be royally pissed off at her doing this horrible thing to me. I know I'm exactly like her now. I also know that I'm getting very hungry and need to do to somebody what Trina was doing to me. But that's just it, isn't it? I can't attack and feed on Trina, can I? Somehow I know deep down that it just doesn't work like that. We can't and don't eat each other. I slowly move and stand on my own feet. I can see my hands are white with black nails. I feel so comfortably cold deep inside, and the frigid winds aren't bothering me at all. Also, I feel so incredibly strong. Trina finishes eating and points in the direction we need to go. We get Abella now. I nod once. Abella. The voice comes out in the same cold, dead tone as Trina's, almost like a choked whisper. Trina and I only have to follow the footprints that Abella's left. We can see in the dark clearly now and don't need flashlights. What's bad for Abella is that we can still walk and run as normal. Living people can. Trina and I only want Abella now. One way or another, we're going to kill her ass. Perspective, Amos Culp. I keep moving through the woods. I swear this blizzard just keeps getting worse. You'd think them damn clouds decided to stop right where they are. I can stay warm in my winter clothes, but I lost my backpack back at the house where Veronica and Trina were. It had my food in it. Assuming it really was Veronica and Trina. Amos! Oh man, Veronica's getting closer now. She probably found my trail and is hot after me. You know, there was a time when I was glad Veronica Grande was the kind of person who liked coming after me. That girl was... she was really sweet on me. I know I was sweet on her right back. Maybe even a little too much. In fact, that's where all this goddamn trouble started that night. Suddenly, I see something just ahead, past some trees. Yes! There's a cabin just ahead. Lights on inside. That means somebody's home. I quickly haul ass. I know I'm supposed to be a man, but trust me when I say that all that shit goes right out the window when you deal with what I'm dealing with. Tell me what a real man you are when those things are eating you alive. I finally make it to the door and pound on it. Help! Help me! Let me in, please! Open up! Those things are right behind me! Oh, man! After a little more pounding, the door finally opens. There's this man looking to be in his 60s standing there. He's got gray hair and a beard and is wearing a dark blue shirt and bib overalls. I quickly brush right past him and into the house. I slam the door shut and lock it.
"You mind telling me what in tarnation is going on here?" the man asks.
"There's these things outside," I quickly tell him. Then I explain to the old man what those things are. The old man just looks at me.
"Didn't think them dead folks would be out here in the middle of winter."
I just look right at him.
"You know about them things?"
He nods once.
"I sure do, son. All kinds of bad things in these here woods these days. Never used to be like that, at least not when I was a young boy like yourself. Now we got all kinds of things walking around in here, things like ghouls, cannibals, monsters, and even dead folks. Usually dead folks are down during the frigid winters we get round these parts."
He raises an eyelid.
"You done sure you saw dead folks walking around out there?"
"I don't know what them fucking things are," I snap. "White skin, white hair, black nails, and they eat people. I seen them things for myself. I saw one who was my girlfriend kill and eat a man right in front of me. She's gonna probably find me and kill my ass too."
The old man just looks at me for a second. Then he moves to his fireplace and takes his shotgun down off from above it. "You better help me secure this place, son."
Turns out he's one of those people who keeps his house prepared against those things that walk around out here. He shows me how to secure the windows with contraptions he can just slide across the windows and lock. Man, I still think I'm in some kind of goddamn nightmare and waiting to wake up. But no, I know I'm feeling pretty hurt deep down at seeing my Veronica like that. Then I hear Veronica's howling, shrieking voice off in the distance.
"Amos!"
Both the old man and me look at each other. Then he points to the front door.
"We just have to fortify that door now. Help me!"
We already secured the back door. Now we move to the front one and start to apply another contraption to keep the door solid. That's when we hear someone knocking hard and screaming.
"Help! Let me in! Help me! Please!"
The old man quickly opens the door and lets Abella in. She turns her flashlight off and looks at us. Abella's damn sure surprised to see me here. She tries to come hug me, but I point right at her and shake my head.
"Come on, son, help me finish with this door,"
the old man quickly tells me.
"Yeah,"
I respond and help him with getting that contraption across the door. As soon as the house is finished being fortified, I turn to the old man.
"You sure know what you're doing out here? You sure all this is going to keep them things out?"
The old man tightens his jaw a little.
"You said them dead folks outside are strong, didn't you? How strong we talking here, son?"
"Strong," I imply with a little more force in my voice. Then I sigh. I honestly don't think these contraptions will keep them out for long. Then I notice Abella's scared as hell. Just the same, she's looking around. Then she points to the old man.
"Jethro Carnes, you're the man I talked to on the phone. This is 21 Old Dutch Road."
She raises a letter envelope that has the address on it. Jethro Carnes nods once.
"Yes, ma'am. You must be that woman I called regarding her little girl. Saw the missing poster on a pole. Didn't think much of it. I just know it was mighty cold outside."
He moves to the fireplace and throws a log onto the fire. Then he faces us again.
"I saw someone walking around out there when I went out to bring in some more firewood. I swear I saw her as plain as the nose on my face, except she looked like what you just told me, son. Never saw snow-white dead folks walking around in these woods till that day."
"So what happened?" Abella yells.
"I grabbed my firewood and got back in here," Jethro tells her. "Already had the windows and doors taken care of, just had to secure the front door. Had my gun, but she never tried coming in here."
He points in a direction.
"I remembered that missing poster and gave you a call. Figured it was the right thing to do."
He looks sad now.
"Had two kids myself. Now they're gone. One's a ghoul and the other one's one of them dead folks that walk around during the warmer weather."
He sighs. "Now we got to deal with dead folks walking in the winter too. Like I said, things didn't used to be this way out here when I was a boy. Now,
Jethro points in another direction. I think it's all because of that river just a few miles from here. Used to make for damn good fishing, then some foul stuff got in that river and changed it. Killed all the fish in the water. Hell, wasn't too long ago I saw that loony Silas Blankenship went back in there and dropped some dead kid in that river. Saw it was little Billy McCracken. Had to come back here and try and get some stuff to get him out. Problem there was, he was gone when I got back. I knew right then and there that that kid got out of the river himself, came back from the dead and was walking around. I should know, because I was a part of the posse that done killed all them dead kids little Billy McCracken made. Never found little McCracken himself, though. Jethro looked sad again. Ma'am, I'm thinking your baby girl ended up in that foul river somehow. Changed her into a different kind of dead folk. One that walks around in the middle of winter. It was quiet again for a little bit. You could hear the snow hitting the cabin and the windows howling. And then, Amos! Oh man, I groan. Veronica's almost here.
What the hell happened to Veronica?
Abella shrieks.
Slam, bang, thud, crash, boom.
Oh man, I groan. Veronica's here for sure. She's right at the front door.
More scares are coming right back when Weekly Spooky returns.
Amos, I hear you in there.
I hear Veronica rasp.
Come out!
Veronica's still pounding at the front door. Then we hear something else pounding at one of the windows.
Are you in there, Abella? You bitch!
Oh, man, I point in that direction. There's another one of those things there. Sounds like Trina. I look at Jethro. I saw what Veronica did to Trina. She can turn people into those things, like her. And then another one pounds at the other door.
Hungry.
Shit, that's Tristan.
One more of them starts pounding on another window.
Let us in, Amos.
Oh, Lord Jesus Christ, not Morgan, too.
I look at Abella and Jethro. Looks like Veronica's made herself an army. Abella groans.
My God, what happened to Veronica?
I point right at her.
Why don't you tell us what happened to Veronica?
Abella looks at me all pissed off.
What the hell does that mean?
I tighten my fists. I was there at Grande Estate that night, in Veronica's bedroom. I know what you did a year ago. I know it was you who came to kill Veronica that night. Abella's really pissed at me now. You've got some nerve, Amos Culp, you son of a bitch. I grin at Abella now.
Yeah, I do, don't I?
Problem here is my nerve and yours are two completely different things. You see, Jethro looks worried.
The way them dead folks are pounding, you might be right about my fortifications, son. I reckon they'll be in here before too long.
He nods to a closet door.
There's another gun and shells in there. Better move it.
I quickly get to the closet and open the door. I find the shotgun in there and a box of ammo beside it. I load the gun and come to stand with Jethro. Jethro looks at Abella.
Sorry, I ain't got no gun for you, young lady.
Then Abella shows she's full of surprises. She unzips her jacket and pulls a handgun out. Before either Jethro or me knows what to do next, Abella shoots the old man right in the head and blows his brains everywhere. His body falls to the floor fast. Then she quickly turns her gun on me and shoots me too. I spin fast and fall over, losing my shotgun. I ain't dead yet. She just got me in the shoulder. Then she comes and presses her knee right on me and points her gun in my face.
I don't know how you found out, Amos, Abella says.
You're right. I wanted my daughter killed that night a year ago. Oliver Grande's money was mine. Veronica had no right to it whatsoever. Too bad you're not going to live long enough to tell anyone the whole truth.
Perspective, Abella Sableson.
I put my handgun in Amos's face. You say you know I killed Veronica?
I know it was you, you fucking bitch, Amos shouts.
I was under her bed that night. You didn't know it, but Veronica and I were in love. We'd just finished being real sweet on each other when Veronica saw some people out in the yard, all wearing black. She knew those people were coming to kill her and told me to get under the bed. Wasn't long before you showed up. Maybe Veronica didn't catch it, but I knew it was you since I could smell that same cheap perfume you're wearing now. He shakes his head slowly. I can't believe what a cold, heartless bitch you really are, Abella. Surprise! What? Did you really think I came all the way out here in this shit storm to find Veronica to bring her back home safely? Veronica had no right to Oliver's fortune. That fortune was mine and mine alone. Oliver promised me that. Yes, you know that Oliver had an affair with me. You know I was just a maid that Oliver really took a liking to. Knowing Oliver wanted to be with me, I simply played his heartstrings. What was my motive? Money, of course. Oliver had billions upon billions of dollars. I was just a maid who had to work just to get thrown a few scraps to survive. I knew if I played my cards right, I could become Oliver's new wife and have access to all that money. Of course, you already knew there was a bit of a problem with my plan. My birth control didn't work when it needed to, which resulted in my getting pregnant. Just the same, I figured I could use my pregnancy to my advantage. The problem, however, was that Oliver Grande came from a proper bloodline to where he would mingle with women from other proper bloodlines for the purposes of having children to carry on those proper bloodlines. Once I revealed my pregnancy to Oliver, showing him the hospital results and telling him that he was the only man I had slept with, he told me he couldn't marry me. Oliver and I had a very heated argument about it. Then he calls me out saying I only wanted to be with him for his money. However, he wasn't going to just cast me off. He told me that I would have to raise our daughter and that he would provide for both of us. However, I could never come back to Grande Estate again. Oliver's offer was this. He told me that if I showed I could love and support our child, if he saw that I was the best mother to our child I could be, then he would leave both our child and me his entire fortune. So I carried Veronica to term. I even had to give Veronica Oliver's name, another condition. She was officially Veronica Grande, not Veronica Sableson. Oliver would send me money that I would use to care for Veronica. I did everything in my power to make sure that little spawn from hell got everything she needed or wanted. I had given Veronica the best years of my life, making her think I loved her so much. As for Oliver himself, he stayed on at Grande Estate with his proper wife and all his proper children that he made with her, none of which he loved in the slightest. Fast forward to a little over a year ago. Oliver had finally died of old age exactly 6 months after his proper wife died. His will had already been made. You'd think Oliver would have kept his promise to me and left his fortune all to me and Veronica. He left his entire fortune to Veronica alone. Not only was I upset about this, I don't mind telling you Oliver's children from his proper marriage also flew into a rage. I was there at the reading of the will and saw them. They were none too thrilled at learning that Veronica was their half-sibling. As far as they were concerned, Veronica was not a pure-blooded, proper grande and wasn't entitled to any of their father's money. However, there was a stipulation in the will that stated upon Veronica's death, the entire fortune would become mine, and mine alone. At first, the children from this pure-blood marriage wanted to turn on me. However, I made them an offer they couldn't refuse. I would split the fortune with them equally if they would just help me kill Veronica. They all readily agreed. That's right. Everybody who is here with me in the backwoods now, aside from Amos, they're Oliver's proper children, from his proper wife. We dressed up in all black on the night Veronica ran away. Oliver taught me how to hunt when we were seeing each other, so I knew how to fire the rifle. Unfortunately, Veronica was wide awake and managed to move before I could shoot her. Amos just told me why. Thanks to that fucking idiot, Veronica ended up getting away, taking a sports car. I grabbed the Hummer and pursued my daughter to these woods outside of Strickfield. You'd think Veronica would have just fucking died after I shot her 3 times. She did, apparently, but it seems she didn't stay dead. I even shot her again and again when she came for me. I barely managed to get away from Veronica when I ran out of bullets. I knew I had to come back for her and finish what I started. In order for me to claim all of Oliver's money, it has to be known that Veronica is quite dead. Her being whatever spawn of hell she is now won't cut it. That's why I convinced Oliver's pure-blooded kids to come back in these woods with me. We needed to kill Veronica to be sure she stays dead. Only then can I claim what's rightfully mine. As for Amos, we needed a good tracker. He was a handyman and groundskeeper around Grande Estate who knew how to hunt. Morgan suggested him, of course. And now, I'm going to kill you, Amos, I growl. You let Veronica get away that night. But Amos roars and manages to grab my wrist. He brings me down to the floor. Even though he's bleeding out, he's still fighting me for my gun. Let go of me, goddamn you, I yell. It's then when one of the window fortifications gives way. Then the back door comes flying open. It's not long before those things are all inside. I punch Amos in the face hard and maintain my handgun. I quickly get to my feet. Oh my fucking Christ. There are so goddamn many of them. Veronica, Trina, Tristan, Morgan. They all look so disgusting. Aside from Veronica, they've all got parts of their body eaten off. Morgan really looks disgusting with her entire rib cage fully exposed, her internal organs still inside. Veronica points right at me. It really hurts knowing you never cared about me. Then she screams, you murdered me! You made me into this! Veronica looks down at Amos. I can see this thing clearly still loves him. Then she looks back at me. Sorry, Mom, but you still can't have my money. I hate Veronica so much that I raise the handgun. I'll finish what I started with you a year ago in these woods. Then I scream and shoot Veronica right between the eyes as those other things come right at me. Epilogue, 1 year later. Perspective, Amos Culp. I walked into this place called Denoyer's Grill. I was surprised it was even open during that damn blizzard. Hell, I was surprised I was still alive and smelling great food. I don't mind telling you I was still hurting at having been shot by a Bella like that. I think it's safe to say I was definitely the freak in the room when I walked into that diner. The man standing behind the counter asked me if I was okay. I shook my head and told him I really didn't know for sure. When I told the man I just got out of those backwoods, him and many of the other customers just looked right at me. The man, David Denoyer, the owner of the place, quickly got on the phone and called for an ambulance for me. Then he told me to sit down and gave me some hot coffee. Denoyer didn't even try asking me what happened out in them backwoods. If you were out in those backwoods, sir, then all I gotta say is you're damn lucky to be sitting here and alive, Denoyer tells me. Very few people go into those woods and come back out with a story to tell, unless you're our mayor, that is. I just kept shaking my head slowly, remembering what happened in those woods. I tried telling Denoyer and anyone else who'd listen. I told them everything that happened with Veronica Grande, all that happened a year ago as I'm telling you this. Even today, it still hurts knowing I'll never see my Veronica again. You gotta know, Abella did not survive those things. Abella ended up emptying her handgun trying to shoot them. All she did was make them bleed this blue blood. Then they all grabbed a hold of Abella and just tore her apart. Abella's screams stopped just that quick. Not that it would have mattered. Later, I'd come to learn that the one thing regarding the backwoods of Strickfield is no one will ever hear you scream.
I ended up watching as those things just sat on the floor and ate whatever pieces of Abella they had in their hands. I was so scared I didn't even try to run. I almost puked seeing Morgan's exposed belly getting full. I figured if Veronica could find me at that old man's cabin, those things would have found me wherever I tried running to. When they finished with Abella, all that was left were her bones. Then those things all looked at me. I think I lost control of my waterworks again, knowing they were going to eat me. Tristan, Trina, and Morgan wanted to. But Veronica told them no. Veronica knelt down beside me. She wanted to take my hand but stopped when she remembered she'd freeze it right off. "Go away from here, my love," she rasped. "You're free. I know you truly loved me." I shook my head slowly. "I still love you, Veronica." Veronica bowed her head. I think it really hurt her, saying what she felt she needed to say to me. "Never return here, ever again. Live your life, Amos. Know that I'll always love you." Then she lifted her head and pointed. "Go that way." Then those things left. I made myself get up and walk back out in that blizzard. I saw the four sets of footprints where those things went off to. I trusted Veronica and walked the way she told me. When I came out of the woods, I only had to walk a few miles before I came to DeNoyer's Grill. I've since bought Tom Barlow's cabin. Some college students are here. They just listened to me tell them why it's not a good idea to go into those backwoods. Yeah, you just know they ain't gonna listen. Much like when we were all here at this cabin last year. Today, like a year ago, has a blizzard about to come down on us. Just can't catch a break during the winter in Feltner County. I point in the direction of the backwoods. I'm telling you people right now, you go back in there, especially during this blizzard, I'll lay odds none of you are going to make it out alive. Those things are in there. They'll trap and eat you when you least expect it. That is, if no ghouls get a hold of you first. I know they want to call me crazy. They just say goodbye and tell me they're heading in to look for game. I shake my head slowly and watch them leave. I try telling them one last time, but they ain't listening. I watch as they pull out of my driveway and head towards the backwoods of Strickfield. I go back in the cabin and look at a picture of happier times, of Veronica Grande and me together. Then I look towards the backwoods and know those idiots are going to run into Veronica and her half-siblings. All I can do is pray they make it out and live to tell the tale, the same way I barely did. I put the picture of me and Veronica down and go put another log on the fire as the blizzard starts. I hope you enjoyed that one as much as I did. What a perfectly chilling tale to end winter with. And thank you to Rob Fields for writing it. We'd also love to hear from you. If you enjoy the weekly spooky novellas, let us know and we'll keep making them. Because I figure every now and then, we want something a little bit more meaty, pardon the pun, to sink our teeth into. Okay, yeah, the puns are just going to keep coming no matter what I try. Moving on from that, if you love what we're doing here, please remember we do it every single week. We're always bringing you the spooky because Halloween is not a date. It is a mindset and a way of life. And if you want to help perpetuate that way of life and keep us going and going and going, join 94 other spookies over on Patreon. For as little as $1 a month, you get all kinds of goodies and you keep us going and going. And speaking of which, I want to say an extra special thank you to our Patreon podcast boosters, folks who pay just a little bit more to get their names on the program. And they are bobbletopia.com, where you can use the code WEEKLYSPOOKY to get 10% off your bobblehead order. Megan Hua, Julia Kirsch,
Christopher Sullivan, Brent McCullough, Gino Lyon, Steve King, Karen Wiemet, Jack Kerr, and Craig Cohen. Thank you all so much. And if you want to get involved with the Spooky, just go to weeklyspooky.com, click on Patreon, and to hear your name at the end of the show, just choose Patreon Podcast Booster. That's $15 a month or higher. We really do appreciate it. It keeps everything moving along. I can't tell you how much I love doing the show, honestly. But now, my Spookies, it's time for me to get out of here. So for myself, for our executive producer, Rob Fields, our producer, Dan Wilder, and our composer, Ray Mattis, I will talk at you next week. And until then, stay warm and keep your throat in one piece. Later.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to find your way back next week. But for now, you are safe. Trust me. Ha 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 ha.